Today is February 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr. in Washington. Coming up...
When the rains start, they're going to have very little protection, and if there's a direct hit from a cyclone, which is not unheard of in Cox's Bazar, they'll have next to nothing to protect them against the wind.
Also ahead, Russia's president speaks to his nation, warning the West on missiles while trying to stem falling public approval. And we take a look at ahead toward the Academy Awards for films this year. It's all on today's International Edition. Russian President Vladimir Putin warned the West in his yearly address to the nation today. Putin said Russia would consider any new missiles deployed in Europe a serious threat. The Russian leader said the U.S. abandoned an important arms control agreement in an effort to build new missiles and then blame Russia. The U.S. has announced it will pull out of the 1987 Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, which it says Russia has not observed. Putin's warning, however, comes as his personal approval among Russians has fallen less than a year after he easily won re-election. In a recent poll, nearly half of those questioned said the country was heading in the wrong direction. Putin faces increasing public dissatisfaction over slow and unequal economic growth. Putin promised, as he did last year, to increase spending on development and social benefits. There were new promises of increasing child benefits and other benefits for families and people with disabilities. But experts note that Russians are unlikely to be satisfied with words and will expect improvements in their lives, including better public services, health care, and environmental safety. President Trump is downplaying expectations for his second summit next week with North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un. But he is predicting it'll be a very exciting couple of days. VOA's White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman reports.
The U.S. president says he can be patient about North Korea getting rid of its nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles as long as Pyongyang does not resume testing them.
A lot of the media would like to say, what's going on? Speed. No rush whatsoever.
State Department spokesman Robert Palladino, responding to a VOA question, says the president's remarks do not denote a change of U.S. policy.
Those commitments made at the Singapore summit will be fulfilled.
At the first meeting with Trump last June in Singapore, Kim committed to work toward complete denuclearization, but that was left undefined with no timetable. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
Chinese officials are struggling to contain a widespread outbreak of African swine flu. Food safety officials in southern Hunan and northwestern Gansu provinces identified the virus in frozen foods over the weekend. The first case of African swine flu, which affects only pigs, was reported in northeastern Liaoning province in August of last year. Since then, the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization says more than 100 cases in 25 areas of China have been reported. Nearly 1 million pigs have been destroyed to halt the spread of the disease. The losses are hurting pig farmers who face increased costs for feed because of China's trade dispute with the U.S. African swine flu poses no risk to humans, but people can carry the virus. Contaminated water or waste food also can spread the virus, which is highly contagious to wild and domestic pigs. Dirk Pfeiffer of the City University of Hong Kong told VOA that China's numerous small and medium-sized pig farms often do not report possible cases. Farmers are compensated only $179 for each pig they lose. The outbreak in China puts neighboring Hong Kong, Macau, and Mongolia at risk. Vietnam, one of the world's 10 largest pork producers, reported its first cases yesterday. Among the top stories in the world, a U.S.-backed militia surrounding Baghouz in Syria warns Islamic State fighters to surrender or die. United Nations investigators have found evidence of gross human rights violations in South Sudan, they say could amount to war crimes. And U.S. President Donald Trump denies asking former acting attorney general to put a Trump ally in charge of an investigation into money paid to a woman during the 2016 presidential campaign. Expanded coverage of these and more stories are at voanews.com. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
The prehistoric monument in England, known as Stonehenge, features megalithic stones that are arranged in concentric circles. The giant stone slabs that form the outer circle are sandstone and are thought to have been taken from a location about 30 kilometers north of Stonehenge. But inside that circle is one made of smaller stones known as bluestones. It has long been thought that the bluestones came from quarries in the Preseli Hills of West Wales, some 290 kilometers north of Stonehenge. An international team of archaeologists led by University College London say they have found evidence of the exact locations of two of these quarries. Rather than being transported from the quarries to Stonehenge by sea as long thought, the stones may have been transported over land about 5,000 years ago. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This week, people who say they have suffered abuse from Roman Catholic clerics are seeking to tell Pope Francis what they expect should happen in a special meeting at the Vatican on the issue. High church officials from all over the world are attending the gathering. Sabina Castelfranco has more for VOA from Rome.
The four-day meeting on sexual abuse in the church opens in the Vatican Synod Hall on Thursday and will be attended by around 200 bishops from all over the world. Pope Francis called the meeting as the abuse crisis continued to undermine the credibility of the church's hierarchy. Survivors and activists from around 20 countries also gathered in Rome with expectations from this summit. Among them is Peter Isley, who was sexually abused by a priest in the United States when he was a boy.
This is a historic moment. This has taken decades. This has taken centuries to happen. And it's now being recognized, and Pope Francis has clearly recognized it as a global problem.
Isley said the same pattern of deceit, non-transparency, and irresponsibility by church leaders is occurring everywhere. He and other survivors would be making their requests to the one person who, in their eyes, can make the difference with his authority. Survivors said many were filled with hope when he was elected 6 years ago.
He took the name of Francis. That was a tremendous and bold thing to do. To take the name of Francis of Assisi, the most beloved saint of the Catholic Church. Saint Francis is for everybody. He's for the world. And to take that name was saying he's going to do what Saint Francis did. He's going to reform this church.
Survivors want what Pope Francis promised 6 years ago, zero tolerance. And zero tolerance, Isley added, has two dimensions to it. Zero tolerance for any member of the church who has abused and for any who has covered up child sex crimes.
And that's just not going to be a sentiment. That's just not going to be an idea. That's not just going to be a hope. That's going to be written into the universal law of the Roman Catholic Church. It's going to be like an infallible doctrine from now on.
Survivors said that after that has been acknowledged and written into church law, the next steps will be identifying all abusers and removing them from their positions. The final hope is to reach what appears to be the impossible, a post-abuse and cover-up Catholic Church. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies warns that hundreds of thousands of Rohingya refugees in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, have little to protect them from the upcoming cyclone season. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Red Cross headquarters in Geneva.
The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies warns that hundreds of thousands of Rohingya refugees in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, have little to protect them from the ravages of the upcoming cyclone season. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Red Cross headquarters in Geneva. Red Cross officials say most of the 700,000 Rohingya refugees in Cox's Bazar will have difficulty withstanding the heavy rains and winds almost certain to hit them in a few weeks. Red Cross spokesman Matthew Cochran tells VOA the refugees are living in squalid, fragile housing with only rotting bamboo and shredding plastic to protect them.
When the rains start, they're going to have very little protection, and if there's a direct hit from a cyclone, which is not unheard of in Cox's Bazar, they'll have next to nothing to protect them against the wind.
The cyclone season begins in April and runs through May. Then it reappears in October. Red Crescent staff and volunteers on the ground are racing to protect as many people as possible from potential disaster. Cochran says so far they have distributed tarpaulins, ropes, and tools to some 200,000 people. He says they have trained thousands to make their shelters sturdier and safer. He says refugees are receiving training on early warning and on emergency evacuation. Unfortunately, that is unlikely to be of much use, as there is nowhere for the refugees to go to escape a disaster. Another concern, he says, is that of waterborne diseases like dysentery and cholera.
The risk of waterborne diseases or other vector-borne diseases is always a concern in an emergency situation like this, particularly where there's inadequate sanitation or inadequate access to clean water, and particularly during flooding when sanitation systems are flooded out and you can see large areas of stagnant water sitting for weeks on an end.
Cochran says the first priority is to rebuild, repair, and strengthen existing shelters as quickly as possible. He says cyclone preparedness training and emergency drills are ongoing. He says water and sanitation, as well as health care facilities, are available to assist those in need. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In France, thousands of people have been demonstrating across the country after a spike in anti-Semitic attacks recently that culminated on Tuesday with vandals damaging graves in a Jewish cemetery. My colleague Lori London spoke with Paris-based reporter Catherine Field about what has been happening and the response by French President Emmanuel Macron.
There have been some 60 rallies right across France on Tuesday evening. There were Paris, Marseille, Bordeaux, Nantes, all of the big cities. It all really got the impetus from last Saturday when there was a group of these so-called yellow vest protesters were filmed harassing a well-known French philosopher. He was the son of a Holocaust survivor. This group was harassing him as he was walking through a Paris neighborhood. On top of that, we've also had several incidents that have been really touched the core of this nation. For example, a bagel store in Paris was spray-painted with the word Juden, the German word for Jews, that was written in yellow letters, and also portraits of Simone Veil, a Holocaust survivor and magistrate in France who died very recently. Portraits of her were defaced with swastikas. So these are incidents that have happened really just in the last few weeks. And it touched a nerve. The political classes were very moved by it, as well as some of the other religious movements. And they came together, some 50 political organizations, unions, and associations, and said that on this Tuesday night, it was time for people to come out and say, that's enough.
I also saw that more than 80 graves were desecrated at a Jewish cemetery in eastern France, and the president had visited there since that happened, but that's just another horrific incident.
Indeed, and these rallies were already long since planned when news came through early Tuesday morning that overnight more than 80 graves were desecrated with swastikas at a Jewish cemetery in eastern France. The French President Emmanuel Macron immediately went to that ceremony. He traveled up there. He met with people there. He said it was important that he was there, that he was with them today. And he promised that the full force of the law would be put to making sure those who carried out this deed would in fact be punished. So this news coming through this on the same day as these rallies really did bring home to people that this is something that's becoming more prevalent in French society, and that something has to be done to make people aware once again that this type of incident is just not acceptable.
And I understand that Macron will be making a speech later on as he attends a dinner, actually, at the Representative Council of French Jewish Institutions. So very timely as well.
Very timely. This, again, just by chance, this dinner has been on his agenda for some time, but he's decided that he's going to make this keynote speech at that dinner. Everyone will be looking at what he has to say, because clearly there are so many currents within French society at the moment that are quite disturbing. I mean, France does have one of the largest Jewish communities in Europe. There's around 550,000 people. That population has grown since the end of the Second World War. It's more than half of what it was then. The Jewish community who is here, it feels as though it should be here, and it feels as though, you know, the French state should actually be doing more to protect it. So there will be a lot of interest in what the French president has to say.
That was my colleague Lori London with reporter Catherine Field. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has nominated 8 movies in the category of Best Picture. One will get the coveted award. So, what are the elements that make a movie the Best Picture of the year? VOA's Penelope Pelou spoke with award-winning playwright, director, and founding director of the AFI Silver Theater, Murray Horowitz, about the year's top nominees.
You have become close to Abigail.
She is a viper. You're jealous.
The Favorite, a dark comedy on scheming politics and power struggle during Queen Anne's royal court in the 18th century, and Roma, a nostalgic take on domestic help in a middle-class household in Mexico City, lead the pack with 10 Oscar nominations each. But the number of nominations does not guarantee the winner for Best Picture, considering 8,200 Academy members from different backgrounds are voting in the category. says playwright and director Murray Horowitz.
You may have a songwriter who wrote a song for one movie, won the Oscar, or was nominated for the Oscar, gets to vote now. I don't know if you're nominated, I think you get to vote. And so that person, who may not know anything about film, but is a great musician, gets to vote for Best Picture.
What's the lyric?
Horowitz says some vote for their friends, others for or against a studio production company. But those who look at the merits of a Best Picture, he says, traditionally they look at the film's cinematography, film editing, direction, and script. But not always.
Step into the spotlight. We'll start that forever!
If Black Panther won Best Picture, I wouldn't be upset.
Nominated for 7 Oscars, that would be a first for a superhero flick. But then again, Ryan Coogler's Black Panther is no ordinary superhero movie. Artistic acclaim aside, it has become a cultural phenomenon that celebrates the African and African-American identity. But how does it stack up next to the competition?
Rome is a kind of masterpiece. I mean, it really is. The things that it has to say about human dignity, about the value of human life, about our complacency in a middle-class or upper-middle-class environment. I mean, those things are all extremely powerful.
This is madness.
Sometimes a lady likes to have some fun.
And then there's the favorite, checking all the right nomination boxes.
I love the fact that the favorite featured women in all the most significant roles.
A film's perspective on race may cost some of the contenders the coveted award. Though beautifully executed, 5 Oscar nominee Green Book, a moving dramedy about the bond between a real-life eclectic African-American music composer and his uncouth white driver during a music tour in the South during the Jim Crow era, has been criticized for whitewashing America's dark historic period.
I'm very sympathetic to people who have said, and I agree with people who said, Green Book is a movie that makes white people feel good about themselves.
On the other hand, says Horowitz, Spike Lee's 6 Oscar nominee, Black Klansman, a blistering satire on racism in America, has been criticized by some for over-politicizing the 1970s real-life story of an African-American cop infiltrating the Ku Klux Klan, alluding to today's political climate.
America first. America first.
This could alienate voters who may not be on message.
Is this the real life?
Ultimately, Murray Horowitz says, the Oscar for Best Picture should be greater than its performers, its music, its script, its cinematography, and its impact. It should be all of the above. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Penelope. You have been listening to International Edition. You can find us online at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, Zaina Abdul-Rahman. I'm Mario Ritter Jr. in snowy Washington. Be sure to take time to enjoy your day.
Relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.